With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, a podcast all about comic book movies and television. I'm your host, Reese Williamson, and joining me tonight are...
James Hunt.
And Jared Cunningham.
Hello. We thought we would mix it up a bit this week. We've just recorded our Black Adam Patreon only big old deep dive.
There's not much of a deep dive into that movie. It's more of a paddle.
James, we're trying to goose the Patreon subs. What are you doing over there, man? It was a deep, deep dive. I think we went about 4 or 5 hours. You know, all my AirPods had to be trashed sort of several times. I think Joe had to go and he had a third child during the recording. That's how deep we went on Black Adam. Big dense movie that we all liked a lot. James was driving the old bus on this one, and Reese Pants are going to drive the bus on this one, and Joe is going to be our gorgeous color commentator throughout. It's been a while since our last news episode. You know, we did a news ep in at the end of September, so we've had a whole month, whole of October for news, and then a good chunk of November too. So we've got lots to talk about. But I thought we would start with
important point of order. We've agreed pre-podcast that we have James and I have veto power on at least one news story each. So if Reese has deemed it newsworthy, but we are like, no, we cannot discuss that. We'll tell you that it's happened. We've informed you, the listener, but we've killed it dead.
And I suspect the reason that Joe is feeling like he wants to gamify the podcast recall we do about comic book stuff particularly is because our first segment is Joe and James particularly are going to talk about the new game Marvel Snap and how much they've been having a good fun time. but actually before that, we're going to give some brief spoiler-free thoughts on Black Adam. And again, if you want our deep, deep, deep five-hour-long chat, then subscribe to the Patreon, you cheap bastards. And then we're also going to give some similarly brief thoughts on the first season of She-Hulk, which, again, me and James particularly have covered a lot, but aware that the regular feed has only had a little preview of the first episode. So, Joe, why don't you briefly run through your Black Adam thoughts?
I think in a year of not very good superhero media, this was maybe my least favourite of all of them.
Wow.
I thought it was very, very...
That's so harsh. That's even harsher than you danced around that in the actual Patreon app we did, but you've gone in.
It's up there with Thor, Love and Thunder. I think Thor, Love and Thunder is...
up there at the bottom.
Yeah, it's down there. It's down there with Thor, Love and Thunder. Which is, like, obnoxiously bad and, like, in-your-face bad, whereas I think Black Adam is just monotonously bad. I have very little positive to say about it other than Pierce Brosnan is a very sexy man.
James, I'm happy for you to speak for me on this. We speak with one voice. Against Joe on this one.
Yeah, I think both of us had a pretty good fun time with it, you know, acknowledging that it was maybe not the most complicated of movies. I found simple joy in seeing a load of D-listers from the JSA hanging around with The Rock, who just sort of spent the movie walking through walls and chucking people over the horizon. I thought that is a good enough time for me to spend, you know, £46 or whatever it costs to go to the cinema these days.
That's basically what The Rock as well does, like, on set, you know, and he's at Crafty. I imagine that's sort of, that's the same vibe. He just walks his way through walls. He throws, like, you didn't get the cod I wanted! He throws the guy into the sun.
But yeah, and so that's good that they, I had, you know, as much fun with that as I had with any Marvel movie released this year or last year, with the exception of Spider-Man.
And you've gone way bigger than you did on Patreon, coming like that.
Just God, we've got to teach the debate, Reese.
Yes, this is really brilliant. Yeah, I guess in a way, is what you're saying, that when you give people less time and space to make their comments are bigger and spicier. Ha! Huh, who would have thought? Twitter.com. Let's all get verified, baby. yes, I thought it was.
Our Patreon notably cheaper than a month of Twitter verification. Just think about that.
Yeah, you'll be a verified Cinematic Universe patron, and we'll send out a tick to you if you give us an address.
Yeah, in fact, if you pay us $8, we will stop tweeting completely.
Indeed. And that's official. That we'll get. That's an official statement.
Should we add that to you?
Yeah, sure.
sure, we'll stop tweeting. I thought it was a fun Rock vehicle, and it was. Although there's a good run in the Patreon app where we go through all of the incredibly rip-off-y elements in the movie. I mean, I think it's a movie with like not a single new idea, but I found there was novelty in the combination of some very, very familiar pieces, like a good jigsaw puzzle when you've made it, you know. and She-Hulk, I will start on She-Hulk season one. I enjoyed it the least of the three of us, and to the point where I was getting bored of my own sort of sucky opinion on the Patreon apps that me and James mostly did on those, because Joe was busy having a She-Hulk of his own, in that he had a baby, he had a small baby, strong like.
Hey, I bounced back in the end, right? I was on the last three, you or did, so, you did. I think.
You got your gamma injection and you were hot on the mic. This is what happens when I'm driving the car. So I really didn't like it. I thought it had the shape of a sitcom, but without any of the. And I don't mean they were bad. I mean they didn't have any jokes or sort of comedic characters or comedic dynamics. And then yes, the last episode was fun and very quirky, but was not the finale of any show that I'd watched for the previous eight episodes. Really didn't enjoy much at all. James, what about you?
I liked it the most. I acknowledge that there were lots of problems with it. I agree with you about the having the shape of sitcom, but none of the underlying superstructure of it. However, I really like She-Hulk. I really like Tatiana Maslany. I really like the sort of comedic dynamics that they did establish between her and Bruce. So occasionally that mattered, and I thought the finale was interesting, if not 100% successful. I think Marvel TV still has a long way to go, but this was one of my more enjoyed shows. Yeah.
I thought that it hits.
Your voice just broke, so that's just calling out
fam. It hit some very low lows early on. But I think it redeemed itself enough in the last three episodes, and kind of showed a more interesting version of the show. And I think probably landed on some more interesting ideas in those last two or three episodes that kind of justified the approach they were taking. And I was much more on board with the idea of seeing more She-Hulk by the time we got to the end of that run than I was midway through. I didn't find myself like running to watch the next episode. I think certainly that final stretch of three episodes, there was a couple of, I thought the premiere episode was solid, and there was an episode with a magician and Madison in early on, which was really good. So yeah, I think it had like some of the best and worst individual episodes of Marvel TV.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Since they got going, but it was never like as boring as stretches of Moon Knight could be, or it was never Yeah, it was. I think when it,
as Falcon Winter Soldier.
Yeah, but I think when it, because well, I think it did have some fairly incompetent episodes, and I think
that
it had
that
some...
wedding episode was pretty incompetent, to be fair.
Yeah, and I think it had, like, for me, it never really overcame the shit CGI until it started actually poking fun at it in the finale. But yeah, I like, I never got mad at it. I don't think I was never like in a way that like some of the other Marvel shows that I think have been so baked into other projects and bringing back characters that you knew before and bastardizing them and, you know, making strange creative decisions. Like, I never got to that level of anger or boredom with She-Hulk that I did even in its lower moments. And yeah, loved the Daredevil episode and loved the way it brought stuff together at the end. Even if I don't think the big conceit of the finale was totally successful, it was interesting and it had strong moments. And yeah, and Tatiana Maslany is fantastic.
It's a star, yeah, a star. So many more of those thoughts if you're late to watch and you want to watch along with us, or you just want more detailed thoughts episode by episode, that is, one more time, patreon.com/cinematicuniverse, and that's £3 a month, and you get all those bonus episodes, and you also get our Black Adam episode, and then in the coming weeks you'll get Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which opens tomorrow when we record, and I suppose the Guardians Christmas special, that's a few weeks out, and then the MCU, the Disney Plus TV train kicks off in the new year as well, so constant stuff on there, and fun stuff like Werewolf by Night as well, which is good. I don't care what people say. So okay, that's enough of that. Let's talk about Marvel Snap. It's taking the world by storm. I downloaded it a week ago and played it for 5 minutes last night, so I'm not exactly an armchair expert, but I know that you two have been playing it a lot more. So let's just James, just tell us what it even is.
It is a Marvel-themed deck builder with a massive array of characters and locations drawn from the wide history of Marvel comics and cinema. It is enormous fun. And
Why?
Because in addition to the interesting mechanics, like every card has its own special ability, every location has its own special ability, and you compete with another player to try and win the locations by strategizing around the scores and the power of each different card. But for me, what takes it to another level of being fun is that because these characters are all familiar things to me and the locations are all familiar things, you create these small little narratives in your head. It's a bit like reading a sort of procedurally generated comic in that way.
That sounds terrible.
But no, it's really good fun. Like, I had
a procedurally generated comic. No, thank you at all.
I had this really fun moment where I was playing a game and I won a location using Cable and Apocalypse together, which, you know, in a sense, those two are mortal enemies, but they came together in that moment to beat, you know, Odin or whatever. And I like that. Earlier, I was playing a game. I won the round by having Elektra kill a squirrel, one of Squirrel Girl's squirrels, and that won the game for me. I thought that was very funny as well. That sort of thing, for me, is what takes it an extra level above those normal deck builder things. Also, mobile game, very easy to play without spending any money. That cannot be stressed enough. I've played for probably, I don't want to put a number on it, double figures of hours since I downloaded it about 4 or 5 days ago. And
10 hours.
yeah, let's say 10.
Or 99, between 10 I've, and
I have not yet spent a cent on it. I probably will because I'm an idiot like that, but you don't have to.
What do they sell you?
They sell you alternate art. Mm-hmm. And more credits or whatever. Like, it's
progressing through your collection faster, I guess.
Yeah, nothing you need to play the game.
Joe, and I'm guessing you have the exact same interest in this as James does. What you love about it the most is when Cyclops does a kiss with, I don't know, Lady Punisher and fights against Daredevil. Same exact thing for you?
This game's like crack.
oh, so it's drugs. Okay, I get it. It's drugs. Cool.
It's it it's intensely addictive because all of the stuff that James has just said absolutely stands. Like I'm absolutely certain that this is like any of the really well constructed addictive mobile games that I play, which is I will be intensely into this for a period of time, and then like Wordle, it will be something that I'm like, I used to do that every day, and sometimes I'd wait until midnight to play it. What, like, why did I spend all those hours on it? But what I really like about it right now is, yes, the gameplay is super fun. I don't play many card games, but the way that this is constructed does seem genuinely quite smart, where there is like fun in constructing different like decks of characters to take to have your, you know, fights with other gamers, but then like actual strategy that you can employ based on the locations that get revealed in front of you and based on changes that might happen to those locations as you play. But I think what you are alluding to is the like beyond the actual gameplay, I love collecting things. My other mobile game of choice is Pokemon Go, which I have never turned my back on. I'm still going.
Well, you don't want to take your back on Pokemon. That's when they jump on you. You've got to be careful.
So just to let you know, in my Pokedex, I have caught 743 different species of Pokemon. I'm on level.
There aren't that many. That's a lie.
I'm on level
40. There's 151.
I'm on level 41. I've got some shinies that I love. Just looking at some recent shinies. Got a Tentacle recently. A Litwick. Got an Onyx. I love my shiny Aerodactyl. So, you know, like, I love all that collecting crap. In Marvel Snap, not only do you collect the cards, and like you actually progress through them pretty quickly in terms of adding lots of new cards to your deck, but obviously, you know, as we know with Marvel characters, they can keep adding them and keep doing it and just keep going and adding more and more stuff to them to collect. But then also, like, you can get variants of each of the cards. So there are, like, fun, like, there are baby variants of the cards with Scotty Young art, and then there are pixelated variants and old man variants I'm seeing here. I haven't got one of those yet. And then what you also do is you can upgrade your cards as you go along, and it doesn't have any impact on the gameplay, but it's just it's the fun little collectible element to the game on top of this, which is that, okay, I've got my Abomination card here, and if I collect enough of the two little collectible elements within the game, I can upgrade him so now he bursts out of the frame of the card, and now the card becomes 3D, and then it becomes slightly animated, and then you can have a shiny logo, and then you can have fun edges, and then the entire card can become shiny, and and that really appeals to my addictive collector / nerd brain, you know. It's so much fun. Like I say, who knows if I'll be playing this in a month's time, 2 months' time, 3 months' time. Just looking at my phone here for the remnants of other games that I've got addicted to briefly. Tennis Clash, haven't played that for a while. So it was a tennis game. I'm just going to delete that because I literally haven't played it for ages.
Oh, is this a new segment? This is Joe live deletes apps he doesn't use.
Okay, cool. My other go-to kind of gaming app, I guess, is the New York Times crossword, which I play to go to sleep each night. I tried Matchmasters the other week. I was really into that for like 2 or 3 days. Can delete that now. Retro Bowl, great little American football game. It's like playing I'm going to keep that. I'll just move that into the keep folder. And then Disney Emoji Blitz had some real potential. I come back to that every so often. Like, when I was addicted to that a couple of weeks ago, I got myself a Kermit emoji I was quite excited about. At the moment, it's snap, snap, snap. I love it.
Would you recommend it, or is it a life-ruining kind of thing? Is it? Is that how addictive it is?
No, what's quite nice about it as well is you can just play as many games as you want. Like, there's no, like, you can only play 5 in an hour.
Yeah, there are no countdown timers.
Yeah, the games are fairly quick. Like, you're talking, like, 2 or 3 minutes to get through a game. and it's more something that you can, like, just pick up and, like, idly play while you're waiting for someone to finish getting ready to leave the house, you know? Like, that's the, it's a nice little, like, break a few minutes of boredom. Or, for example, which... sit down, wee time is a great opportunity to play. Or, if, I don't know, for example, you're sat on the sofa and what's on the TV is some annoying shit aimed at a three-year-old, then... but you need to be present. Marvel Snap, great.
You've been watching Obi-Wan Kenobi? Okay, that's weird. I really shouldn't be sticking the knife in. That show came out 3 months ago and has disappeared in all of its existence. But hey-ho, it was bad, and Andor is very good. Everyone watch Andor. It's really, really, really good.
Andor what?
So dead air, dead air. Let's go, yeah.
Go through. Yeah, we don't have time. I've got a load of news stories. I've got what I've called big news stories and what I've called small news stories, and I've got 9 of each. And there's we've discussed, there's a gamification element. They can be vetoed at any point, and they're in reverse chronological order. So the stuff we'll start with is the stuff that has been known about for a while, but I still think it's worth discussing. And the first of the big news stories is that Blade. Things have happened behind the scenes at the Blade movie starring Mahershala Ali, and the thing that happened is the director has left, and you know whether we've had these scenarios before with Marvel and with the wider Disney stuff. Star Wars shuffles on directors fairly frequently, although you know not for a while, although they haven't made a movie for a while, so that's probably why they haven't been firing Star Wars directors. they're not making anything.
They did they did cancel someone's movie, didn't they? A project that was announced has been unannounced.
They cancelled Wonder Woman director's movie, right? They cancelled Rogue Squadron directed by
Patty Jenkins.
What if space ships? And no, they didn't want to do that. What if, they thought, is there any movie, as we're looking around 2022, where there's a movie that's been a hit about a fast plane? Looking around, can't see one. Anything about planes? Can't see one at all. We'll cancel the space planes movie. Yeah, we will cancel that movie. So they haven't cancelled Blade, but the director has moved on. It's like these stories usually go, we don't really know much of the picture behind the scenes, but there's been more gossipy stuff behind the scenes that wasn't part of the official statement. Rumors that the script was very short, that the script had very little action in it, that Mahershala was very unhappy with the process, and then the other thing that's happened sort of since that, these are the first two stories of 9, Joe. It's more like 8 stories. The first two are kind of a combo story, is that that's meant a lot of release dates have pushed back. So Blade, which was going to be coming out September 24, that's the year, has basically jumped a whole year to November 23. That's seemingly had an impact on Deadpool 3, which has moved from Nov 24 to September 24. That's not that big a jump. Fantastic Four's been pushed back to Feb 25 from Nov 24, and then Secret Wars moves from November 25 to, it's almost ridiculous we're talking about these movies that are so far away, but they'll come out and we'll do a podcast about them. I wondered, James, do you have any thoughts on this? Does this make you more or less excited for Blade? Were you excited for Blade in the first place?
I think we're too far out for me to have any real opinion on Blade. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I would rather they make the right movie than the quickest movie. And if they feel like the star and the director weren't getting on, it's better to nip that in the bud now.
Joe?
So here's some important context on Blade. He only costs one energy, but he inflicts three damage. But here's the interesting thing. His power is that he destroys something in your deck. Like, so you sacrifice... And obviously what's happened here is they've tried to play their Blade card, and what's happened is it's gone... Yeah. Poof, wiped out the director.
That's tough. I feel bad for Bassam Terek. He needs to get his Marvel Snap game up a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so Harrison Ford... Harrison Ford has joined the MCU. I'm moving on. As the new Thunderbolt Ross, he's replacing William Hurt, who died, so he wasn't going to do it anymore. I find this story interesting. You know, so they've announced.
This is weird. This is really
it's
weird.
It's kind of weird. Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of interesting. Yeah.
And let me tell Everett, just start off by. I don't have the Thunderbolt Ross card, so I don't I don't know the analogy.
The bit
here.
Is over. The bit is over.
It's weird that this character who doesn't have any like demonstrable links to the Thunderbolts other than he's called Thunderbolt Ross. Who I guess I think if you put a picture of that character,
he's led the Thunderbolts.
Yeah, but like it's not like he's intrinsic to the idea. It's not like you need to have Thunderbolt Ross in a Thunderbolts movie. And I think if you put a picture of the character in front of most MCU fans and go, "Who's that guy?" they'd go, "Oh, that's the general character who was in that thing," or "He's the guy with the like General Ross, right? Do you know he's called Thunderbolt?" Oh, is he? Oh, right. So that's why he's in the Thunderbolts, then, is it? That seems to be the only reason. And then to go, okay. So yeah, very sadly, William Hurt passed, so he can't be in this movie anymore. So we need a new actor. Why does it have to be Thunderbolt Ross? Like it feels very odd. And then it feels like an odd choice for Harrison Ford to be coming in fresh to the MCU as this character who's been around for a decade.
I don't think Harrison Ford comes in fresh to anything in his life, actually. I want to say that up front. He's a guy who gets out of bed particularly fresh after 12 hours and a jacuzzi.
Yeah, it just feels odd from his perspective as well to come in and be like, yeah, the new face of a role that people didn't really care about.
He's one of those funny actors who has been shit talking being famous or being in big movies since he was 35 and he was Han Solo. Oh, I just want to fly my planes. But he actually takes loads of those roles and he's done it all throughout his career. And in some way, it's sort of the pace of that has like hastened a bit in stuff like Cowboys and Aliens, Ender's Game. That one with the dog. No, that's not that one. But you know, he does strike me. You know, the lady doth protest too much. He's in Rise of Skywalker, right? He's like, I'll only do this if they kill me off. And then, oh, too late. Yeah, I'll pop up. I'll come and do a bit on a where there's a lot of water, and I'll talk to my son or whatever. Yeah. He just, you know, this has a bit of a. Not Craven's too harsh, but you know, I just don't know that William Hurt was going to be in these movies. Because also the story is not just that he's in Thunderbolts; it's also that he's going to be in Captain America. My gut is that William Hurt as Thunderbolt Ross was not going to be in these, or at least not with a sizable role. And what happened is William Hurt sadly died. You know, too young. He wasn't Chadwick Boseman age, but he was too. He died sort of tragically early, and. Feige's like, well, okay, you know, Harrison Ford's he's a big star, one of the biggest, you know, in my opinion, he's maybe the greatest sort of, he's maybe my favourite movie star. You know, him in those indie movies is pretty unbeatable, in my opinion. And there's an opportunity there, and let's beef the role up. And then again, if you're Ford, you know, indies, you know, I don't think he's going to make an Indiana Jones movie after this one. He's not going to make a Star Wars movie. But, you know, that Marvel cash, and you know, I'll be some elder statesman figure, and I can, you know, and maybe I can also
big paycheck.
I can also do some Red Hulk shit, right? Turn me into Red Hulk. I'll do a motion cap. You know, that also seems weirdly like an easy way to continue to be, because in the comics, listeners, he's also a Hulk, by the way, the character. And so it just all feels quite calculated on both sides. But that also doesn't mean I'm not excited. That's my view.
You know, that's a good point, actually. I don't want to spend too long on this, but if they were going to use the Red Hulk in Thunderbolts, that would be a good reason you had to have General Ross. And then if he turns up as the, like, rent-a-villain that Captain America apprehends at the start of that movie, that would explain why he's in both. So maybe there's a reason, yeah.
you know, it's interesting that there was a lot of speculation that Abomination was going to be in. Wait, is he? Did they announce him for Thunderbolts?
No, we speculated a lot.
Right, and I think I'd read that elsewhere. But it's, you know, they didn't announce him. He doesn't seem to be in it. And oh, okay, now we have a Hulk adjacent character perhaps involved in that team. I wonder whether, you know, when the William Hurt thing happened, the Harrison Ford thing happened, they see they just can swap out a big old guy who can transform into a. Tim Roth is not old. He's middle aged. That's a bit harsh on Roth. He's a middle aged guy who turns into a big, you know, CGI blob. Let's swap one of those guys out. But yeah, I'm actually, after having said all that, I'm kind of excited. Harrison Ford is just amazing. He's amazing, and I think Indy 5 could be really good.
I think Harrison Ford was one of the great movie stars of his era. Do you think he's brought that to other stuff recently? I guess Rise of Skywalker had that. It had moments, but I find that difficult to judge as someone who's not really interested in Star Wars. But like, do you think the last decade of Harrison Ford has? Can you still get excited about him turning up in something?
I don't think Harrison Ford has the necessary engagement to bring the level of charisma that he is capable of in most of these movies. Come on, like, he's there for nostalgia's sake. He knows it, you know it. Just enjoy it on that level. If he brings anything new to this performance, I will be stunned and happy. But realistically, what you're watching there is the memory of Harrison Ford.
Fucking hell. It's like bodied him.
I mean, I guess that's kind of what I was getting at with Harrison Ford, though, which is you so often feel his disinterest.
Yeah, he's like Bruce Willis in the latter part of his career, where you're just like, he doesn't really want to be here, but he's Bruce Willis, so he's bringing the memory of John McClane with him.
Except I think he's, and I know you're not Star Wars guys, but I think he is amazing in
Rise of Skywalker.
The first one.
Yeah, Force Awakens. Yeah.
Force Awakens. I think he's the heart of the movie, you know, but he is, and the movie works because of him mostly. and he fucking showed up, and he said he never wanted to do, really, and go back. He went back, and he was great, and he showed up, he did the work. I think it's, one remembers that Star Wars and then Indiana Jones, and of course this, it's, you know, these are all now the same people, you know, the same conglomerate, at least, casting him in this stuff. I could see Indiana Jones 5 being special, you know, and of course he's not physically the same guy he was 40 years ago. I'm not physically the same guy I was 4 days ago.
What happened?
I can see it being special. Oh, I just had a fall. I fell in the bath.
Another bus.
Another bus. This is, yes, I was hit by a bus. I was fine. It was 5 years ago. We don't even think about it. I can't remember it. I could see part of what we, you know, part of this is him in that, how good he is in that, how committed and how much he showed up for that has led to this. And so I think I'm excited for that. I don't think they would have made it if he doesn't need the money anymore, right? How old is he? He is.
But wait, we're not litigating Indy 5. We're litigating.
No, but I'm saying he's 80 years old, right? He's 80 years old. He doesn't need to do any of this shit.
None of them need to do it, Reese. They're all richer than astronauts.
Astronauts. That's interesting. Okay.
It's a Simpsons line. It's a Simpsons line. Look at
it. It's a Simpsons line. Simpsons did it. anyway, I think he's got more charisma than the three of us combined. And if we all had like kids who were very charismatic, we all joined a band and we travelled around the country. Harrison Ford still beats the whole band in charisma wise. And that's no drag against you guys. We're all.
I think that's a range of opinions we have had there. Sure. Next piece. Okay. Next piece.
I'm lost.
Ant-Man trailer. They released it.
They did. Cool. They did.
It's cool. It's not what I was expecting, even though the sort of pre-chat on the film was, hey, you know the Ant-Mans and Wasps They go into the quantum realm. That's the movie. That's what we're doing. They go in there. Kang's in there. Bill Murray's in there. You know, getting cancelled. that's what the movie is. And yet the trailer, which is that, still surprised me because, you know, and it's that Marvel trick probably of, hey, let's, you know, we'll do a sequel. The third one of these, the eighth time we've seen these characters, et cetera, et cetera. But what can we do to make it look pretty new? And at least from this trailer, it looks pretty fucking new because the quantum realm looks kind of unlike stuff we've seen in...
Yeah, I mean, you say that. It looks like they're acting in front of a green screen with nonsense on it. Right?
Okay.
Like, I like Paul Rudd and I like the idea of this movie. Even I am sitting there going, like, do I want to watch him stand in front of a bunch of fractal nonsense for 2 hours? Like, I hope they've got a way to make that landscape feel a bit less abstract. Yeah, and I'm not usually someone who cares about that, but in this instance, that's the vibe I got off the trailer.
So, the vibe I got from the trailer, and also, hands up here, I watched like a leaked version of the trailer that played at... it was on Twitter one day, it was a leaked version of the Ant-Man trailer that played at D23, I think, which was a little bit like... darker than this and more focused on the on Kang having captured Cassie and like putting his like bargain to Scott, and there was a lot more like footage of like them actively in peril.
Putting his what into Scott?
What did I say? I can't remember.
I thought you said putting his bargain to Scott.
Bargain.
Putting his bargain to Scott. Sorry, apologies.
It's not a Matrix reference. but yeah, I guess I am automatically on board for this movie because I like Paul Rudd. I like the first two Ant-Men movies. Ant-Men-mans more than most people do. I think the sequel is legitimately underrated. I think the action in the Ant-Man... Okay. I think the action in the Ant-Man movies is like a cut above the majority of the action in the MCU, and I think Peyton Reed is a cut above most of the directors in the MCU. Charismatic cast. I like Catherine Newton from... I thought she was really good and freaky, so I'm kind of interested in her as an addition to this, as the third Cassie Lang. And and yeah, and I am interested more after seeing this than I was after seeing him in Loki, in seeing Jonathan Majors as just a scary, badass villain Kang, who we know is going to be important in this next phase of movies. And him being a bigger part of this. Like, that's all the stuff that I'm on board with. I am a little bit worried by the quantum realm of it all. And it did just look a bit like CG background sludge to me. And that... If that is where all of the action is taking place, that to me doesn't play to the strengths that Peyton Reed showed off in those first two movies, where all of the action felt so... grounded in like real world items and the fun of turning cars into micro machines and like having salt and pepper pots being thrown across kitchens and then becoming big and small again and you know, like I love the geography that he plays with on those San Francisco streets when there are chase scenes and all that kind of stuff, and I wonder if that's going to be possible to do in a like CG generated world. So hopefully it's not all that, or that they've got an actual take on the quantum realm beyond. I think what we saw in the trailer was pretty bland.
Beyond Dune.
Yeah.
What if it's Dune?
Yeah.
They have cloaks now. They have hoodies.
But yeah, I'm kind of on board and wild to think that this trailer dropped almost the very worst week a trailer could have dropped to have oh hey, it's Bill Murray, lovely cameo in the middle.
It's sort of surprising they didn't cut that. I mean, you know, he's in it for a shot, right? What you know, just for their own sakes, just pull that out.
Sorry, on that point, I forgot to say this on the Black Adam pod, and I forgot to say this when we were discussing it earlier. Absolutely wild to have a Kanye West track playing prominently in one of the big action sequences in that movie.
I thought that. Actually,
and you were like, can we just dial that back from the DCP at this point? Like, is there something we can do that
What if for that sequence in the movie it was like the, you know, the Mummy trailer that they released with the, it just had all the sounds and the bumps? They just did that. They pulled the song out. It was just like bzzzt, bzzzt, blomp. That would have been good. okay, are we ready for our next big story, or do you want one from the smallie? You want a smallie?
Do them in size order.
No. Mix it up, so then we've got.
Well, I'm giving you just the big so far. So these are the big news stories. I haven't started with the smalls yet. here's a small one, I think. James, you might disagree, but it's been a while. So this is just the news that Armor Wars is now being developed as a film.
I can't believe you put this in the small section. What the hell is wrong with you? What the fuck?
Can I be peek behind the curtain? It was in the bigs, you know, pre the record. This record, it was the top of the bigs. But then the problem was, I just start looking at the story, and the thing is, there's nothing, there's no detail here. There's nothing else to talk about. It's just that.
Yeah. What we talk about is that people have finally realised that War Machine is the cool version of Iron Man.
We did end up we talked about this on a podcast in some capacity.
Because you were all saying that Armor Wars wasn't coming out, and I was adamant that it was.
Prior to that, and I've said to James since then, I can't remember whether me making fun of Armor Wars not existing or no one caring about War Machine was a bit to wind James up, or whether it was something that I actually believed. I genuinely don't know at this point. I think we talked about it in the context of Secret Invasion, that it feels like there is a level of Disney Plus TV show that 2 or 3 years ago, or a story idea that 2 or 3 years ago was being developed as a Disney Plus TV show, and now makes less sense with the direction they're going. I think we're going to see less of the, like, B-level movie characters bumped down and more Disney Plus used as an opportunity to introduce new characters and then elevate them up to the movies. Yeah. And certainly take it, like, I think if this was, if Secret Invasion was being made now, it would be being made as a movie and not as a as a limited series. And that I think is the main motivation behind turning Armor Wars into a movie. Less so, my goodness, we must give War Machine the movie treatment. But also, you know, it's Armor Wars is.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's tangential Iron Man IP, right?
So, this is what I was going to say, right? Is that you could easily position this as the successor to Iron Man. Put War Machine in it. Yeah. Put Ironheart in it. Go nuts. Like, those bring two
back,
together.
Bring back Sam Rockwell.
Sure, yeah. Ben Kingsley, why not?
My board. Do him. Do the bird. Make the bird. Actually, the bird's now the bad guy. The board.
Anyway, if this movie happens, because this is the one thing that concerns me. Well, this is the thing that concerns me, right? Definitely, if they were going to make a TV series, that's small potatoes money-wise. But now the considerations and the scales are different. So I think if it happens, I'm going to be very happy, but there's a slightly bigger chance that it won't now.
Which it's interesting, you know, we talked earlier about the gaps that have opened up in the schedule a bit because of Blade, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, this could also be, and I'm not, you know, and I'm absolutely not just saying this because they would both feature African-American lead, but, you know, this just, there is a gap now in the schedule, and so perhaps there are other behind-the-scenes conversations happening about, well, you know, what if we did She-Hulk season, well, you know, She-Hulk season 2 is probably too far along, but what if we did She-Hulk season 3, well, that time doesn't work on that, you know, Moon Knight season 2, that, you know, is a movie now, or it's Moon Knight versus Werewolf by Night, and we, you know, that's a movie because there's a gap appearing, you know, you could see, you know, because that is how these things work, it's not as, you know, I think Feige does a very good job of making it look all very planned and controlled. And actually, these movies, you know, get affected just as much as any Hollywood product by all sorts of random shit, COVID, you know, actors passing, sadly passing away, and things getting delayed. And that's part of the I think that's part of the magic trick, especially as the MCU has matured, the way that he has made it all look part of the plan, to quote a cheeky little guy from another film. Whereas actually it's all the, you know, they are flying by the seat of their pants, by the seat of their pants. But also, you know, by design, that's just what Hollywood is, especially movies of this scale. So yeah, Armor Wars, it's coming, maybe. Another smallie or a couple, a biggie? I've got two biggies that we can combine. This is a really big story, so we could hold off on this for a minute.
You're driving the bus.
I'm driving the bus. Okay, we'll do a smallie quickly. So Secret Wars has a writer. It's Loki's Michael Waldron.
Oh, God.
Is that a veto?
Oh, God.
What are you saying?
The idea that Loki's writers would go on to anything, I don't know. I don't know how that show got written, but let's say the writing was not my favourite part about it.
Sure. I mean, this is of the two Avengers films, this is the one that has a director attached. This is going to be directed by, no, sorry, that's, I mean, correct. Sorry, the other one has the director attached. So the Kang Dynasty is going to be directed by Daniel Cretton from Shang-Chi. And I think we probably do know writers for that one, although I can't see it here. But this second film, we've now got a writer. He's clearly a bit of a rising star in the MCU world. And because obviously he wrote Doctor Strange as well, or he rewrote it. So yeah, I don't know if this tells us anything. I mean, I'll answer my own question. This doesn't tell us anything about what Secret Wars actually is going to be about. But I wonder whether it could tell us anything about who could direct it. I'm not sure. It's hard, you know, fairly opaque tea leaves on this one, Joe. I don't know if you have a different thought.
No, apparently he's attached to Kevin Feige's Star Wars film as well. So I think he's probably just.
He's a
Feige guy. He was a Dan Harmon guy who's become an MCU guy, and he's obviously a favourite of Feige. And I think to be honest, I wonder whether there is just a case of now, like, here are our kind of top, here's our top trusted talent in the company. Right, you go on that project, you go on that project. You know that that's kind of how it works.
Couple of casting, we're sticking in the small, couple of casting announcements for the same project. So this one's less surprising, or there's less to talk about, which is that for the Agatha Coven of Chaos spin-off thing starring Catherine Hahn, Emma Caulfield is returning, which is, you know, I think a lot of people, she was good in that show, but I think a lot of people thought there was more to that character than there ultimately ended up being. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether this casting is kind of a reaction to that, to a degree.
Well, everyone just loves Emma Caulfield, right? Because of...
No, for sure.
She was good in
Buffy. And I want to say, Emma Caulfield, didn't she come out as... she'd been diagnosed with an illness in the last couple of weeks? Yeah, she's got MS. She's announced in the last couple of weeks that she has MS.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's connected with this story, but that's she's also been in the news kind of separately for that in the last couple of weeks, which is sad. So that's I'm not sure there's a ton to discuss there, but I think the more interesting, similarly, there's not a lot to talk about, but that Aubrey Plaza has also been cast in Coven of Chaos, and she's having a bit of a moment at the moment. I don't know if you guys are watching White Lotus. I am. She's one of the absolute leads of that show. She's really good in it. Different kind of performance than stuff I've seen from her in the past. So she's clearly on the up. And this, I don't know, this, I feel like she, you know, there's a version of her career where she does bigger stuff, and this doesn't feel like that. This feels like she will clearly be a supporting role or perhaps the villain in this spin-off already of a Marvel show. So, but I just, your thoughts on that. Are you guys excited?
So, I have come around more on Aubrey Plaza in the last couple of years. I kind of thought that she was a very one-note performer for a lot of her career, and I didn't really take to some of the... She appeared in some bad comedies like Dirty Grandpa and Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which I thought that, like, her shtick seemed to be almost like, God, can you believe I'm in this? And, like, some not very good, as far as I was concerned, indie stuff. I thought she was really good in a movie called Black Bear a couple of years ago, where she's the lead of that movie, and she's really fantastic in it. Thought she did some interesting stuff in Legion whilst I was still watching that show. So I've come round on Aubrey Plaza. That being said, this casting feels weirdly just very on the nose, like exactly the kind of thing that you would expect her to turn up in. And like, I mean, whether she is an ally witch or a villain witch, like it just feels like that's what she's going to say. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's more interesting than that. But yeah, it just feels very obvious. And I'll just say on Emma Caulfield quickly, just that one of the reasons she was in WandaVision in the first place was she was in Jack Schaefer's debut movie, which I think was called something.
Timer, was it?
Yeah, something like that. Something to do with time. Maybe Timer. Yeah, Timer. You're correct. Which I watched after WandaVision and thought was like charming and that Emma Caulfield was good in it. And yeah, just nice that they're continuing to work together, I think.
Yeah.
Lovely. Here's two stories I really don't know that anyone has anything to say on, but I thought they were worth an inclusion. So, the directors of two upcoming comic book films have been announced. They've announced the director of the Bad Bunny El Muerto movie, and it's Jonas Cuarón, son of Alfonso Cuarón, who co-wrote Gravity, and he made a film in 2007 that no one will have seen, no drag on him. So that's just a little... We've checked in with this strange... little project, and you know, all of the sort of Sony cinematic web of Spider-Man characters and IP in a wonderful world of Marvel magic. They're still going. They're making Man and Web. It's got kind of a good cast. That's going to come out. This is probably going to come out. I read some rumor today as I was googling for this show. You know, Tom Holland may be close to signing a big new deal for more Spider-Man movies. Who the fuck knows how this other stuff will link into that? Will it be more linked? Will it be less linked? You know, will they just announce the Tom Holland stuff going forward is unconnected from the MCU? Maybe, actually. I don't know if anyone wishes to chime in on that. And actually, I will say the other bit, which is totally connected. It's the director of Venom 3. Who directed the first one? Ruben Fleischer. Who directed the second one? Andy Serkis. And the third one has been directed by Kelly Marcel, who I hadn't heard of. She's
like Tom Hardy's creative partner, right?
She co-wrote the previous ones, okay. Right?
Co-wrote the previous ones, and I think her like breakthrough credits were Saving Mr. Banks and Fifty Shades of Grey. And yeah,
as a screenwriter.
Yeah, so I think she's as a screenwriter, and I think she's been, like a vet. She produced. She was executive producer and then producer of the last one, and I think her and Tom Hardy have a very close collaborative relationship, and it makes sense from that regard to me.
And if the creative steward of that of those two movies, or you know, the reason why those movies are good is because of Tom Hardy and his ideas.
Again, a version of good.
yes, a very entertaining, different kind of superhero movie that maybe a very close collaborator with him on these films as the director of the third one, which you wouldn't say about the first two, is probably a good news story. Anyone want to have any opinion on El Muerto?
No, I don't. Yeah.
Okay. He's a character. Okay. Let's talk about the probably the biggest story of the.
No,
of
wait,
the
month. Can we just pause to talk about Madame Web?
Sure.
So, S.J. Clarkson's directing that.
Uh-huh.
Who, you know, Jessica Jones, the big previous superhero thing. If this is right at IMDb, it has the cast as Sydney Sweeney, Emma Roberts playing Mary Parker, Adam Scott playing Ben Parker.
What?
I don't know if this is
That's
right.
That's got to be one of those.
Yeah.
Sounds like bullshit to me.
Isabella Merced playing Anya Corazon. That's a character, right?
Yeah, that's, Heart of the Spider, Aranya.
Right, okay.
Spider Girl, yeah.
And then also in the cast, Zosia Mamet, Taha Rahim, Mike Epps.
We need to not get our information off IMDb.
I mean...
Well, but those are actors in the movie.
Yeah, the character stuff might be speculative.
I told you, it's a cast is stacked.
That's wild. And obviously Dakota Johnson as the lead. Yeah.
Oscar nominated Dakota Johnson. Did you get a nom last year? No, she's including a People's Choice Award and nominations for a BAFTA and two MTV Movie and TV Awards. That's one award. That's not two separate awards. Times for two awards. That's two awards. Okay. Maybe that's going to be good. And another thing that...
No. It's okay. Not... No, okay. The cast is interesting. I don't think it's going to be good.
But what if there was a Lady of Web?
It might be good, but...
Let's find out.
I don't think we can say that purely on the basis of having an interesting cast.
Correct. But let's talk about interesting people behind the camera. And that's a couple of guys. You might have heard of them. One of them's name is Peter Safran. Who's that? Maybe rings a vague bell. Yeah, rings a vague bell. And James Gunn, you'll know him very well. They have just been put in charge of DC Films.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you here. I'm going to use my veto power for
this.
Okay. No, I'm kidding.
Eugene. Okay, so this is, I think, the biggest story we'll talk about. These, at least, you know, we don't... There's nothing to announce in terms of projects, right? And it's not like Gunn has stuff in the hopper for DC that is coming out, or that these two are linked to any future projects. So this is just a story. It's a purely kind of speculative story, and it's a positioning story for the future. James Gunn, we all know James Gunn, but Peter Safran, it's here. Goodness, where is it? Maybe come back to me for that. But this is the Feige role, but for Marvel. So we've known that Zaslav has been looking for this guy, that Walter Hamada sort of had something posturing to the same kind of role over DC Films for the last, you know, five-ish years. There have been some other guys in the mix in this hunt, which has been, you know, fairly public if you read the trades search for this guy. They've picked a sort of a duo, Peter Safran and James Gunn. Obviously, James Gunn has had a very interesting sort of combo role now over the last 10 years ish, or you know, 5-6 years between DC and Marvel. I don't know. I don't really know what to think about this. I don't really know.
What a wild ride for James Gunn. None of this exists. This role would not exist if he had not been cancelled by who was it? I can't remember specifically which right wing.
It was the Snyder fans getting upset.
No, there was
Oh, well, no, it was Trump people, wasn't it? Getting upset that he was bad-mouthing the president.
I can't remember which particular right-wing Twitter dude it was, but got particularly up in arms about it, dug out these old James Gunn tweets, got him fired by Disney, which led to him getting the Suicide Squad gig, but was ultimately rehired by Disney, got to come back and finish off his trilogy and his Guardians trilogy, and then and add a holiday special into the mix as well. Meanwhile, back at DC, they give him a spin-off from his movie his partner can be the co-lead of, which has then ultimately led to him becoming basically the half of a Kevin Feige for DC. Mm. And all of this for a guy who started off his career at Troma.
that is amazing.
With Lloyd Kaufman. It's wild. I do find it kind of depressing that this provocateur director this is where he's ended up, in an executive role, crafting the direction of a superhero universe. But I mean, good for him. I'm sure he's getting paid a lot
of money. In fairness, James Gunn strikes me as the type of person who can't not make movies. Like, even when he was directing big stuff for Marvel, he was writing other movies and getting them produced and stuff. Like, he just can't not do it. So I think we'll see more from him. It's a shame that it'll probably be within the DC framework, but also I think he's got a long career left in him after this. So let him get some money built up and some clout, and then let's see what he does afterwards.
I have looked at Peter Safran's sort of CV, and he's got the more traditional. The thing with the Feige thing is you know, like, studio heads are more the Peter Safrans, and they're people that you haven't heard of, and they are, you know, they create creative relationships, but they aren't necessarily the front men of stuff. It's the Feige thing is just this unique beast. So Safran, he basically had a career as a manager in the film industry, which isn't an agent, but isn't a producer. So, you know, Twitter, if you tweet at me, I'm at Reese, explain to me what a manager is. So, you know, so he managed all the loads of actors. So he managed Brad Pitt, Aniston, Sandler, Nicolas Cage, Courtney Cox. And then he's sort of transitioned that into more film producing and stuff with Warner Brothers. That's why the fit is obvious. So he's the guy behind The Conjuring. He's done some loads of DC stuff. So he's an EP on Aquaman, Shazam, The Suicide Squad. He does the Belko Experiment 10-odd years ago that's directed by James Gunn, or at least he wrote it.
Written by James Gunn,
yeah. So that's probably, I mean, looking here on Wikipedia, that is perhaps where the connection comes. But he's like a horror guy, so, you know, he's Annabelle Creation, he's the Nun, he's Annabelle Comes Home. He loves Annabelle, and he wants to give us Annabelle.
What was the James Wan Deep movie?
Oh yeah,
Bring that back.
Yeah. Bring that back.
Get that back into production.
Yeah. So I think what the announcement says, and you know, you said, Joe, that it's sad. He was this provocateur, James Gunn. I mean, and you know, he's been put back in his box here. But you know, you also would look at stuff like, you know, on the edgier end, Joker and the Joker sequel, Folle Carl or whatever it's called. Foliada. And then probably on the slightly more mainstream slice, you've got The Batman. You know, DC, the Marvel ship is gone, right? So if you're DC, you need to be doing something different. The Snyder stuff didn't connect enough, so it's not that. I wonder whether this announcement says, we know we have to be a little bit different, you know, and that's Gunn owes his career to the Guardians being a sort of a jut out when Marvel was going in a certain direction. And now you could argue that direction, the Guardians direction, has become the Marvel direction, but you know, it was a zig when you thought they were going to zag. Yeah. And so maybe they kind of need some people that are going to try and do something different, but not so different. i.e. it's just still a guy who has made very successful versions of these movies and a manager who's these aren't provocateurs, not anymore. These are, you know, working, successful Hollywood people.
but maybe they have the air of they'll do something a little bit different, and that's kind of what you need. But also, I just think it's interesting that it needed to be two people that you know you couldn't. there isn't another Foggy out there, perhaps.
For me, the most promising thing about this is that James Gunn, having worked closely with Feige at Marvel, can hopefully bring some of that discipline and some of what worked at Marvel to DC. Because, like you say, there's only one Kevin Feige, but if people who've been in his, you know, orbit for a good 10 years or whatever can take some of what he does to other companies, it's got to be a good thing, right? Because what DC is doing now is flailing and weird and not entirely successful. And if they can maybe tighten up a bit, fingers crossed.
It sounds like I think there was some talk of there being like a Zoom call with all Warner Brothers people like today, literally day of recording, where they were talking about having like one overall story that they want to tell through the movies, which I think, you know, I think we've been saying for a while that overall direction is something that the DC movies have been lacking. However, I wouldn't say just bringing the Feige brand of stuff over to DC is a good thing, because there is already enough homogeneity on the Disney Marvel side, and I think for all that the DCEU as a total project has not worked, it has occasionally thrown up some really interesting stuff at us, or some more interesting stuff at us, by virtue of not having that kind of overarching competence, maybe. and also, you know, James Gunn made two movies over on the Marvel side that we've seen. I thought the second one, I still think it's got good stuff in it, but I think it's worse for Gunn having more of a leash. And I would say the same for The Suicide Squad, which I just, yeah, found really, I think...
You mean less of a leash, don't you? You mean less of a leash?
More of the leash to play with.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Something with a leash and...
you mean the ones where he has more control are the less good movies, and therefore this where he seems to have a whole lot more control, that's maybe not the heading in the right direction in your experience. Not to put words in your mouth, Jack.
No, I think it... I don't know, I felt like Suicide Squad was... Yeah, but yeah, basically what you were saying, but... I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that James Gunn is in this role. But I'm not convinced it's a good thing either. I don't think we've seen enough from him to be convinced that he's got a golden touch. But yeah, maybe the broader direction of the DC stuff will be more competent. And I think that that's probably a good thing for their more prominent characters, you know, for the big characters on the DC side. And to maybe do some of the stuff that Snyder was aiming to do from a storytelling perspective, but not quite as depressing, the full on, like not quite as bleak, with not quite as bleak of a worldview.
We talked about this on our Black Adam Patreon app, but briefly with that stuff in mind, you know, we've got Henry Cavill now coming back. He's Superman. It looks like it's a fairly sizable commitment because he's been replaced by poor young Liam Hemsworth. And I say poor young because people don't seem to like that idea very much on the onlines. So yeah, what are you guys, how do you see the return of Superman, particularly in the light of the new DC leadership? Does this make you more or less excited? You know, because it's funny, you were talking just now about James Gunn doing Snyder but not so serious, and on the Black Adam episode I pitched like a Superman in space versus Brainiac kind of thing. You know, and James Gunn, you know, he's just, at least at Marvel, he's been a space guy. I just wonder your thoughts on that.
For me, the thing about James Gunn is that he remembers to put some heart in his movies, and I think that can probably be a good thing for Superman. If he's got any creative steer, like, I hope he will say, remember, these movies are supposed to make you feel good.
Joe?
I think Henry Cavill is a good Superman. He looks the part. I think he's been underserved by the content prior to this. I think it's positive. I think there is the potential to make a good Superman movie with Henry Cavill. I've got no idea whether that's James Gunn, you know, within whatever plans they have, and how heavily it features Black Adam. I don't know, but I think bringing Henry Cavill back to that role is as good an idea as... I don't think there's anyone that they could have recast him with that would have made more sense than Cavill, so, yeah.
Okay, I got a couple more small castings. We're going to get very brief reactions through, and then I got, again, a few more stories to finish out the episode. So, firstly... Christina Milioti has been cast as, sounds like, basically the female lead slash villain slash antagonist of the Penguin series. So she's been cast as comic character Sophia Falcone, so the daughter of Carmine Falcone, played by John Turturro in The Batman. I think this is fun, and I kind of like the idea of Colin Farrell penguined up, who was, you know, the best part of that movie, which is a good movie. Although, yes, I gave it the same rating as Morbius on Letterboxd, don't at me. I think that's, there's something there to me in her versus Colin Farrell for 9 episodes on HBO Max. A million. Do you agree?
Yeah, sounds fun to me.
Sounds fun.
Love Colin Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
Really like Christina Milioti.
Mm-hmm.
9 episodes of a Penguin series. I don't know if I want or need that. I don't know if I'll ever watch that. But that, yeah, those are two actors I really like, that, and they're in a thing.
Agreed. Well, I would have agreed, except I've watched a show called Andor, which I thought I had no place in my life for, and now I'm kind of into prequels again, or for the first time. Andor's so good. So, you know, yeah, it's all about who's behind the camera, who's telling the story. And finally, in the smallies.
Andor what?
Finally in the smallies is William Jackson Harper has been cast in a mysterious role in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Is he Reed Richards? Yes or
yes.
No?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, you flipped. You didn't think he was before.
I do now.
I guess. Wow. Okay. That's it. That's it for that one. Not for the episode.
Cool. I really hope he is. He's
good, isn't he? It's good casting.
I mean, like, and it feels like
it's,
I think,
obvious.
The MCU do that obvious on the nose stuff. The Fantastic Four is crying out to have some diversity added to it. Josh Trank did it poorly, but yeah, that wasn't a bad idea to look at to have a different look to that modern day family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, GD is such a great, you know, especially fucking buff GD that he outed himself as that series went on. It makes too much sense as Reed Richards, and adding him to the cast this, you know, and finding out about it this late in production in a movie that also features Kang. Yeah, I just think I think that's what he is.
And you can see that like, you know, if Secret Wars ends up being Reed Richards versus Kang, like the Hickman comic was, you can just already see the energy between, and let's call him Chidi for now. Actually, that's the role that I'm most familiar with, him versus Jonathan Major Kang. You can just see it. You can see what that movie would be, what that conflict would be.
I also think he's really good in a small role in Patterson as well, which is, I think, the only other thing I'd seen him in prior to the good Place.
Well, I watched in October. I hate scary movies in general. I hate them. They make me spooked out and scared and give me nightmares. In October, though, it's all I watch because I'm a little freak. And I watched Midsommar for the first time. And I knew he was in it, but I think I thought he was doing something different because, you know, often sitcom actors, you know, they want to sort of do other stuff in their first few film roles. But no, he's kind of playing like the brainy guy who's above it all. Like he, you know, he's doing that. And guess what Reed Richards is? He's the brainy guy. He's the very fucking brainy guy who's above it all. And he's above all because he's done a stretch and he's like stretched up to be above everybody. Yeah, I hope that's what happens. Okay. So kind of in casting slash announcements of new series. And this is both unsurprising and a bit obvious, but also really cool in my opinion, which is Paul Bettany is coming back as Vision in a show maybe called Vision Quest. White Vision is back.
I had no knowledge of this.
Yeah, right.
This was
what?
Not on my radar at all.
What?
Is this real? Yeah, I mean, I'm not plugged in at the moment, Reese.
No, I know you've had a little She-Hulk. It's pretty real. So what, this news story is from October the 28th. Guys, this is 2 weeks ago. I was very much aware of it at the time.
Okay, I was on holiday when this happened, that's why.
there's not more to it than that, but apparently it's called Vision Quest. The writer's room has opened in the last couple of weeks. And sources say it will star Paul Bettany and it will follow the adventures of White Vision. That's not what sources say. I mean, that's the character that the show will take place. You know, it's not a prequel, apparently. Okay, so this is extremely fresh news then to both you. And this was in the big news chunk, by the way. I thought this was big news that people should know about and you didn't even know about it. What do you guys, you know, give me live reacts, you know, podcasters react to Vision Quest.
Yeah, I'm happy to see him back. I hope the show is good.
Okay. Joe, any more words than that?
Yeah, I don't know that I needed to see Vision back again. Mm. Or if White Vision is the interesting version of that character. But Paul Bettany's very talented. He was great in WandaVision, and I'm not against it. Maybe they have another crack at this time actually doing the Vision series.
Well, yeah, in a way, I don't know if James agrees, but we've sort of jumped over some fun Vision stuff in the MCU. You know, you cover a lot of ground quite quickly with Vision, right? He gets introduced and he's just been created that, you know, 10 minutes ago, and then the next time you see him, it feels like it hasn't been that long and he's in a relationship, you know.
Wait, can I preempt one of your news pieces here? Vision has stuff to do with Wonder Man, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they've just cast Wonder Man for the Wonder Man show, right?
That's right.
Are these things happening at a similar time?
I guess they are. I think
Wonder Man's happening
a bit
before, right? So.
But still, I wonder whether there is potential for those characters to be popping up in each other's shows?
Yeah, definitely potential.
Indeed.
White Vision, the Vision Quest series to be set up during the course of Wonder Man or something.
I feel like they're going to have to come up with a different name for him than White Vision. Marvel PR are going to have to try and be like, we don't want him to be called White Vision. This isn't the White Vision show. This is, I don't know, the Pastel Vision or something. I'm just looking at... James, I know from reading this news story that Vision Quest was a comic. Do you know anything about Vision Quest, the comic?
No.
Cool.
That is too deep a cut even for me.
Sure. Well, we can read the next story was that Yahya Abdul-Mateen II is reportedly cast as Wonder Man. I thought this was interesting, you know, just from a career management point of view, which, fucking hell, Jesus Christ, why do I read news stories from a career management point of view? What is wrong with me and my life and the way I live it? I kind of thought he was on an upward swing and this feels like not the kind of project that would be next to be announced of him, I suppose. So, final news story of the app, a little show that me and James are big fans of, and I don't think Joe has watched yet because he's had a little She-Hulk. The Sandman is getting a second season. Had you heard that, James? Had you
heard
that?
Yes, I had heard that. Wonderful. I think it's good news. I don't think we have much to say about it, though.
Yeah, here's the weird thing, though. The only thing I'd throw into this, I know we want to wrap the episode, but Netflix haven't officially called this a second season. They haven't. They have said The Sandman will return with new episodes, which I find interesting. So there's a bit of an asterisk on this news story, I would say. But anyway, we're getting more of The Sandman. And James, off the top of your head, do you know the next trade paperback? You know, or the next big story after what the first season covers?
Off the top of my head, Season of Mists is the next one, I think. And
is that one a good one?
Yeah, it's one of my favourites. You know, Morpheus and Hell.
Oh, hell yeah.
Following that is A Game of You, is it, after that?
Oh.
Which, yeah, a lot of people don't like.
Oh, shit.
I think maybe that's the answer. Might be misremembering.
Do the one people like, and then we'll decide later on whether we do the shitty one.
Yeah.
Or do the shitty one last. But that's really good. I think that's a really good show. It's not a great sign, to be honest, that they waited this long to renew it. That, you know, and the renewal is a bit asterisked. I think that's probably setting up a scenario where whatever's next is all we get. But anyway, we shan't. What's the line the Vision has in the Avengers at the end? What's the famous line?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Somebody help! He says a thing about humanity, right?
A thing isn't beautiful because it lasts.
Yes, so that's The Sandman. okay, cool. Lovely episode of the podcast we have had there. That's it. We'll have another episode in a month-ish. But in the meantime, you can subscribe to our Patreon if you wish, patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. But yeah, for this episode of Cinematic Universe, that's all from us. And we say hello, goodbye podcast. Goodbye podcast.
Goodbye podcast.